I was interested to hear about the training and the process of the dark part, like how that evolved and how you proceeded through the training for it. And
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I thought that in the process, I had this fantasy that we would work in the dark a lot, and that we would become like experts at moving around in the dark. But in fact, we worked not very much at all in the dark. And one of the reasons why, and we worked extremely quickly, meaning like I think we probably really made that piece in a matter of 4 or 5 days. You know, we never had the sound working the way we had the sound coming out two speakers on the side of the room. You know, it's not the same at all. And we had a room that was white walls. We never had a room that was black space
really
except for at the
dark.
kitchen when we had an intensive there. So we really didn't. You couldn't see. I mean, you couldn't see in the dark part that well, but you couldn't really prove what was going to happen until you got there. So I think my strategy included the fact that I worked really intensively with the dancers. We had a very trusting relationship, and that people were really willing to just try things and not rely on, you know, what they looked like, which is great because the dark part was pretty dark. But they really relied on listening. So on listening to each other, on listening to the rhythm of a condition of the dark part, like from beginning to end of the dark part, was all about them listening. It wasn't so much about like it was important to practice moving around in the dark, but it was really about listening both to what they could hear with their ears and perceive from the others in the room, the rhythm that they were creating together, listening internally to sort of timings about what was happening in the room. Like, oh, we should all go now, or no, I actually the light isn't quite bright enough for me to run. I'm gonna wait, and then we go together. So these kind of techniques didn't come out of necessarily actually practicing in the dark. I think they came out of as a result of our just working together on the nine bodies, and the kind of work that we did in that, which was really like specific in that. That we really knew what we were doing when we were doing it, and we worked to articulate it to each other to check in to make sure that that's really what was happening. So, because we had that technique or that sort of, we were used to doing that, then when we got to the dark part and we only had a little bit, tiny bit of time to work on it, we already had laid down the groundwork of our performativity and questions about relating to the other and questions about listening. And it's very easy if you're in the dark. What do? You listen. So they, you know, it was in a way it was easy. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't a lot of work, or it didn't require their total concentration, which it did. But darkness already gives you so many limitations that it makes the job a lot simpler.
I feel like the way you were rigorous with working on the section that had to do with ropes, which in the actual performance of the piece turned out to be quite a short moment in the scope of the whole piece.
Invisible ropes.
Invisible
Yeah.
ropes, yeah. That I feel in particular the work that you did, and it was quite rigorous and spent quite a lot of time, that really informed and allowed dark part to develop in this very quick way.
That's true, because invisible ropes are manipulating things they can't see.
It was this interesting relationship between invisible and darkness. It was always like it's not a direct correspondence, it's not two sides of a coin, it's not, I don't know what it is, but there's this relationship between one and the other that is just kind of mesmerizing. From the inside, it's kind of like, what is this thing between manipulating an invisible rope and being in the dark, being a body that nobody can see? It's just like,
And then, just to say briefly about the score for the dark part, in a way, it was negating anything that had to do with object and shape, like we talk about Doug, who's making these sculptures in with sound, but my goal was to try, and it was a gamble whether it would work or not, because I'd never made a 25-speaker sound installation before. But it was the idea to create something that just hung in the space.
Sound-wise, you mean?
Sound-wise, yeah. Yeah. And although it was in four channels, so you experience movement, and you literally, woven in the score, was I recorded the dancers in the section where they're the river, and recorded them.
The bodies on the floor.
And put that sound, wove it in and out of the rest of the sound for the dark part. Mm-hmm. And so then there was this link of like that sound being here and that sound being down there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it created a floor and a ceiling, but there was no, I didn't want to have any sense. You were just in this kind of soup.
Yeah.
Of darkness without say, oh, the sound's going over there, or the sound is over there, or it's like a circle over there, or it's a triangle over there.
And you know, whatever. Yeah, and we were trying to do the same thing with light. Yeah. So that, I mean, in the beginning, there was a source of light that you see it peeking over the curtains and coming through the gaps in the curtain. But during the piece, even though the lights, if you look up, you could see the lights, but as you're looking, generally, you get a sense, you have no idea where the light is coming from. And that was the same with the sound that was happening. And you used that word mist. Mm. Like you wanted to create a mist of sound.
Something that hovered or hung that you couldn't point to coming from a place.
Right, that's sourceless.
Sourceless.
And it's funny because in the first part of the piece, we have the sound, we have this contact mics on the wall. And when the dancers touch the wall...
So there's a direct link. It goes the scope.
Trajil has to leave. So goodbye, Trajil. Thanks very much.
Bye, Trajil.
Bye.
Thanks, Trajil.
Thank you so much.